I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Please calm down.
Throws bin. I'm not gonna calm down.
Come on to the rock show. Come on to the people show. Come on to the premiere show. Smackdown.
It's the 7th of October, 1999. Big Daddy is number one in the UK chart. I never thought that was much of a film.
Do you really?
The Adam Sandler one. Not the UK wrestling legend.
I thought Giant Haystacks was the singer out of the two.
I stole your joke. I trod all over it. Rather like Big Daddy. All the cool kids are apparently playing Pac-Man World. Oh, never mind. And yes, the third podcast in a row. April 65's Blue... in brackets, Dabadi, end bracket, is still number one.
And who says that my plan to buy as many copies as I can didn't work? It's still there, baby.
I thought you were lying, Tom.
Nah, mate. I control the means of production.
Right. Well done, Corey Graves. But all while that is happening, while all the cool kids are listening to that song, whilst playing that game, and then stop playing that game to watch that film, there was a show.
Oh.
A little show. It's called, I have to check my phone because sometimes I forget, Smackdown. All one word, Tom. Very weird.
Well, Meltzer used to think it was two.
Oh.
In the old episodes of The Observer, he was writing Smackdown with two words.
Well, if it's on TV, it must be true. Smackdown hit its seventh show in canon. But what happened on the show? Is the British Bulldog on it? Yes, it is.
Does he get his tail shot?
Well, whatever happened to Shasta McNasty? All these questions and more can only be answered on the Cutlaholic SmackDown recap. Joined as always by the fantastic Tom Campbell.
Welcome to the Cultaholic Classic SmackDown review.
That's what it was called.
It's fine. It's fine. Just throw it to me. I'll do the name. It says it in the thing as well. People have clicked it. They've seen the name already.
You know, really? Yeah, but at this point. No, at this point, they've stopped listening. They just want to know, is Eiffel 65 still winning?
We've got a poll going on in the office, which you'll remember first. The name of this episode or the email address to send to Cultaholic. My bet is on neither ever.
At least that's a video one. It's like, and the name of this podcast says Matthew points at Tom. And sadly, we have to... Put the brake on the hilarity, because this episode ends with the sad news that Gorilla Monsoon has passed away.
That is a gear shift, isn't it?
I know, right?
Wowzers. Yeah, so, when we'll get into the rigours of Friday Night SmackDown 4 this week in a short while. Do you want, before we get into it, a few bits from Wrestling Observer this week?
Do they exclusively confirm that Monsoon is dead? Or
Well, do you know what? In this particular one...
It'd be kind of awkward if they say, well, we're not sure.
Well, and Dave goes, well, he might be dead, he might not. a few bits from Wrestling Observer and before we get into the rigors of SmackDown this week. Just a few days ago, the WWF wrestlers packed their bags for Birmingham in the United Kingdom.
Yeah.
As this past weekend, WWF Rebellion, a UK exclusive pay-per-view event on Sky Box Office, emanated from what I believe was the NEC. Or was it the NIA in Birmingham? The National Exhibition Centre or the National Indoor Arena.
While
I'm guessing
check this,
the NIA.
Please continue.
So on this, and this was a bit of a thing that WWF started doing around about this time and up until sort of 2003, where they decided this is rubbish, let's stop. They love to do UK exclusive pay-per-views. The first, of course, being One Night Only, the night where Shawn Michaels got his title shot against the Bulldog and beat the Bulldog in the main event. That's another subject for another time. So then we went into this series of basically house shows that you pay 15 quid to watch on television. From this particular night at Rebellion in Birmingham, Jeff Jarrett defeated D'Lo Brown for the IC title. I seem to remember from watching
to retain
this
his IC title.
To retain the IC title. I apologize. I remember watching this live, and I remember my dad being very interested by this because Jeff Jarrett walks out with Miss Kitty at the very beginning. So immediately, dad's vested interest. I remember also D'Lo Brown emanating from Birmingham. He said he was now residing in Birmingham.
I forgot he did that, yes.
Also, The Godfather beat Gangrel. This feels like such a house show.
Yeah.
Val Venus beat Mark Henry.
Battle of the Sexes.
Battle of the Sexies. Ivory defended her women's championship against Jacqueline, Luna Vachon, and Tori. Mm-hmm. Chris Jericho defeated Road Dogg. China beat Jeff Jarrett by DQ. Kane defeated The Big Show. The British Bulldog defeated X-Pac. Edge and Christian beat the Acolytes and the Hollies to retain their number one contendership for the tag titles, I believe. I may have that wrong.
No, I don't think that's correct.
I might be wrong. And Triple H defeated The Rock in a steel cage match for the WWF Championship. Also on this night, British Bulldog defeated Stephanie McMahon's short-term memory with the trash can. This was the night where one of the very few occasions where on a UK-only pay-per-view, a relatively big angle went down.
Yeah, and this will come up later on in the show when it comes up. We were going to think about watching this. However, as you can tell, it's just a house show. And you are right, at the NIA Arena. Well done. And yeah, why were they doing this? 13,500 people in attendance to see this.
Jeez.
We loved WWF.
Oh, God. Well,
we absolutely loved it.
We've talked about this on this podcast in the past. The industry was so crap at this point in the UK. And that is with love to Johnny Storm, Jody Fleisch, Doug Williams, who were putting this industry on their back to keep it afloat in very choppy times. But it was a really tough time for wrestlers in the UK in the late 90s. So when the WWF rolled into town, it drew big old numbers.
Yeah. And this is because it was on Sky Services, which is the subscription service in this country watching.
Well, it is until recently.
I was going to say, I'm setting the scene. It's 1999.
Oh, of course, yes, we're in 1999. I'm paying
Pac-Man World.
I'm paying £14.95 to basically watch a UK version of Smackville. Think on that. Yeah. That's basically what this is. More bags were packed this week. Unless you watch
one last thing about Rebellion. I don't remember anything apart from the Bulldog thing we'll come to. And the main event, which I think if you're going to watch anything from this show, because like I said, there's not much else to talk to other than, oh, that was good. That main event, I remember being fun because they brought outside the ring, Triple H was bleeding, and The Rock got on the mic and says, "That is not the blood of a champion. That is monkey piss." And that stuck with me for years.
I don't remember that line.
I don't know how you could forget it, Tom.
I say the lines I do remember from that. I remember, where's my title shot? You call that a title shot. We'll get to that later. I also remember The Rock saying, finally, The Rock has come back to Birmingham. Like, almost getting the pronunciation wrong. And then on commentary, Michael Hayes calls it Birmingham. And then JR corrects him and says, actually, it's Birmingham. And then Michael Cole does a proper Brummy accent and goes, Birmingham. And which JR responds with, "We're not in Alabama." I remember that. I don't remember the monkey piss line, which makes me sad.
That's a good bit of doing your research. It reminds me when Bischoff, I think one of the last, maybe in Insurrection 2003, in Sunny Newcastle.
Oh, yes, it was, wasn't it?
Bischoff said,
"We killed the UK pay-per-view market."
Bischoff has the line. Ah, see what it was. He goes, he looks at the crowd and goes, "Wow, I thought the UK was suffering from mad cow disease, not fat cow disease."
Bunch of Geordie lasses going, "Oh, we're bonny lad and shite. Get your send out, Greggs, lad." And that's the women. Was that the night as well where Jericho did Talk Is Jericho? Not Talk Is Jericho. His chat show.
Yeah, the highlight reel.
The highlight reel, where he did the whole, the Spice Girls, the Rice Girls, the Nice Girls, where he was. And did he, am I right thinking?
I already did. He went, Steve Austin says, like, if you want to see me beat up Chris Jericho, give me a hell yeah. Hell yeah. And Jericho's like, if you want to see Jericho beat up Austin, give me a.
Do what I diddy diddy dum diddy do.
And they did it. I was like, I can't believe they did that.
give me a Sunderland is brilliant. Killed it.
Chirp, chirp.
Kevin Nash and Triple H headlined. It was sensational.
Oof.
Also, packing their bags in this particular week was Vince Russo and Ed Ferrara.
Is this a week?
They packed their bags for Atlanta, GA. Baddest streets in the whole USA. Russo and Ed Ferrara, according to the Wrestling Observer newsletter with the unflappable Dave Meltzer, the men who were responsible for writing WWF television shows that have been drawing huge ratings for the past year abruptly quit the company and signed on with WCW over this past weekend. Russo, in various interviews, cited the burnout factor of working so many hours with the added stress of the SmackDown show as the main component for his approaching WCW, first through J.J. Dillon, and then closing the two-year deal after lengthy meetings with Bill Bush on the 2nd of October, signing the contract in Atlanta the following day. He went on to WrestleLine, which I believe was
the WrestleLine.
The WrestleLine. I think Mean Gene Okerlund was running that as a side bitch.
I've not heard about that freaking thing in years. Wow, sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, so basically on WrestleLine, he cites how drained he was from being on call 24 hours a day for 3 years to Vince McMahon.
Bro.
It'll be many years before we get the story of Vince Russo saying, I'm tired, I'm not there for my kids, to which Vince McMahon says, why don't you just get a nanny? Amazing. Yeah. Father of the year. Russo and Ferrara start officially with the company on the 11th of October, so just a couple of days after this SmackDown. However, plans for Halloween Havoc are already laid out, and there's no changes expected until after the next pay-per-view. So Vince Russo and Ed Ferrara are gone. And I think there was some concern, some scuttlebutt in the industry that this was going to be a massive game changer for WCW. I mean, it was, but not for the reasons that we may have thought at the time. Yeah, a lot of people thought this would be sort of the end days for WWF.
Yeah. Lots has been discussed about Russo, not so much Ferrara, who would like to point out at this junction that one of his credits is for the Adventures of Sonic the Hedgehog cartoon.
No.
Absolutely.
Ed Ferrara did that.
And I added him because it's like...
Oh.
I think I actually remember the case of the missing high tops written by Ed Ferrara. I know it goes. It's like, anyway, yeah.
Why be sad about that? That's incredible.
Because I think he wrote for Duckman as well. So he had like a background in TV writing.
A good writing background.
And as we know about WWE now, they're like, you know, hi, I've been a wrestling fan for years. Get out of my way. I wrote Duckman.
Exactly. So, we all thought he was the Barnacle Boy to Vince Russo's Mermaid Man.
Shows us. I think I've more experience than Russo now I think about it. But yeah, much has been written about this.
I'd rather see Vince Russo write Sonic the Hedgehog, actually. Okay. Bro, hear me out, bro. Sonic the Hedgehog teams with Dr. Robotnik.
Yeah.
Bro, they turn on tails.
Yeah, I was about to say, episode one,
hear
season
me out.
One. Sonic turns heel on tails.
But he's faced by the end, and they reveal a new character who is killed 20 minutes in, but then brought back to life 3 months later. Bro, hear me out, bro.
Episode two, Sonic comes out with shades and a tuxedo. I don't know any of you an explanation. Anyway, I digress, but it's such a complex thing to go on about when even people got SmackDown to be talking about, and this is something we'll bring up later on and all this. But yeah, Russo and Ferrara did a really good job of bigging themselves up. We were the reasons they got big. And for a while, before everyone had their own podcast and the internet was prevalent as it is now, we all went, oh, they're the thing laying the golden eggs at the minute.
Yeah.
If WCW gets them, then they'll just fix all the problems. A few things. One, Russo did have many great ideas, but he needed a friggin' editor or two. Two, nothing that anybody could have done could have saved WCW at this point. Russo gets a lot of the criticism Russo gets is absolutely deserved. However, he is not the only person that, like, what's that thing about Caesar dying at the hands of Brutus, Brute.
Too Brute.
And like eight other lads are all knifing him. It's like, so saying that Russo killed him is like saying, oh, Brute killed Caesar.
Yeah.
Also, these eight other guys with huge knives in him. It's like, yeah, you know, he helped, but it wasn't like he's the only guy who did it. And this is very prevalent because WWF keeps on getting better quality-wise of this next year that we experience.
Isn't it weird?
And WWE's quality decreases. degrees.
It's like putting batteries the wrong way around.
One of the best examples of Rousseauism is, I love saying ism, like we know about Enochism.
Well, yeah.
Rousseauism is he came up with great ideas, but would, and it's amazing to look at now, they would have to come up with the finish later. Yeah. They never had them written down. So the higher power, Vince was the last resort because issues like Mankind didn't want to go bad, Jake Roberts declined. So they didn't have it written down. They wrote it on TV. All right, right. What's the conclusion? Which is amazing to me how fast paced this was. And they wrote down, Test will marry Steph. Okay, well, we haven't got up an idea yet. Oh, okay. Bulldog, quick, use amnesia.
Well, there was this was one of two storyline U-turns that they were looking into for this.
What was the other one?
The other was that Tess was going to sleep with Terry Runnels on the night before the wedding, and that was going to hold off the wedding.
I hadn't heard that before.
Meltzer mentions this and says that the one that they went with was one of two ideas they were bouncing around for how they were going to sort of curtail this storyline.
Jesus Christ, they could have been like the Holly cousins. She'd be like the Crash Holly to Tess. plastic face, blonde wig. Oh God,
it's quite the look, isn't it? It's quite the thought. But to go back to what you say, it's the idea of putting the storylines on telly before you've really finished writing them is crazy.
Right,
but I kind of, in a weird way, applaud it. I find that sometimes I'm a bit Rousseauist in my life, in the sense that if I'm about doing something, I'll just do it. I'll just start. And then once I've started, I've just got to do it then. Like, true story, when I started here, I pitched Wrestling Curiosities, which is the podcast we do on a Sunday, which is I'll write about weird wrestling stories. And Adam was like, yeah, great, do it. I said, cool, right, I'm doing it. I don't know any. So I best learn some. And it was just that thing. And then I started and I found a couple. And then I got to like week three and I went, I need to find more. I need to dig even deeper. And so a lot of the times, I think because I just went, do you know what? I'm just going to start. Sometimes we get a little bit, we need a bit of that, a little bit of that starter cap. Because sometimes we can just overthink something to the point where we don't do it. And I kind of weirdly applaud Russo a little bit. Having said that, like, mate, it's a multi-million dollar company.
Yeah, I was about to say, it's nice that you'd say that, Tom. You're you.
Yeah.
Literally.
This is Vince Russo.
The biggest wrestling promotion in the world right now. We'll think about it later, Vince.
Also, another bag was being packed this year. It wasn't so much a bag. It was a suitcase for court. As WWF Entertainment are filing a breach of contract lawsuit against Martha Hart and the estate of Owen Hart, asking for a dismissal of Hart's wrongful death lawsuit against the company, damages in excess of $75,000 plus lawyer's fees for a breach of contract, and at worst, a change of venue of the Bret Hart law of the Hart lawsuit in Connecticut. So chance they want to move where the court case is happening to Connecticut, apparently. The WWE's grounds for the lawsuit are based on Owen Hart's signed contract to July the 1st, 1996, which requires that any and all claims, disputes, or other matters in question that arise from or relate to the contract have been adjudicated in Connecticut. So I must admit, I'm not entirely sure what spurned this. I know on the Monday, WCW ran the Owen Hart tribute match.
Right.
And I have a feeling that there's some connection there. They ran the Kemper Arena for Nitro, and that was the night, this Monday just gone, in this timeline, where Bret Hart faced Chris Benoit in the main event.
With Harley Race as guest ref.
Yeah, in the Owen Hart tribute match. And I have a feeling there was some issue with the WCW running a tribute match for Owen Hart. I don't know why. With something
that.
So That's... sensitive, WWF, who are going to the trouble of hiring Jim Neidhart and a very immobile British bulldog, why they would choose to play silly buggers over something like this.
Yeah. I'll wait till we get more from this. From next week's podcast.
More will come out upon this. Anyway,
it is shades of Rousseauism. Even the court case is getting swerved in the
league. Oh my God, aren't they?
It's why they employed Bulldog. Right, Bulldog. We need you. What? Do you need me to give you a good reference from Martha Hart? No, we need to throw a bin at her.
Let's crack on with the show.
Oh, crack on. The Laugh a Minute podcast of SmackDown.
How do we begin?
Rip Gorilla.
Oh, yes.
And also on Nitro, that opened up with Heenan and Tony talking and saying, let's send our regards to the entire Munster family. And then Heenan just very succulent says, yeah, we're going to call the front bit of heaven
the gorilla position. And you just see him tear up. I remember watching that quite recently. Yeah. And, your heart wrenches. When you watch Bobby Heenan talk about it, and the moment he talks about the gorilla position, you just see him go. Like, yeah. This is a guy that you've worked with forever who is no longer with us. And I guess being in WCW, you feel so far away from it all. Like, it must feel peculiar. But yeah, it was, really lovely opening package from the WWF.
Oh, Vince is lovely in this.
Gorilla Monsoon. I thought that was really
one of the finest human beings I've ever had the pleasure of. Oh, God, that was nice.
And it's true. Like his spirit lives on. The fact that, the fact that the gorilla position exists. Right. That says all about the lifestyle of Gorilla Monsoon. Favorite Gorilla Monsoon call?
It's, I'm glad you're asking this because I've got one in my head. Okay. There's many good gorillarisms, but of course, obscenism. Mm. But the one I like the most is it's a Halloween episode of Primetime. So I believe Gorilla is dressed up as Brother Love, and he's dressed up as the Genius, and he's like, I'm gonna take you insulting the Genius like this. He tries to get up, but he's still got the clip on mic, so he's like, he almost garrots himself, and then Monsoon comes out a line that I've not heard before or since. He goes, the two of you couldn't get locked up together. I think it's a really fabulous way of putting this. You're too thick to get arrested with help. So what's yours, pal?
Mine's a real cliched one, and it's just. It was when Shawn Michaels threw Jannetty through the glass window of the barbershop. That whole scene is always punctuated by Gorilla. I know normally we say, show, don't tell. But for some reason, just Gorilla just describing what happened.
Yeah.
Accompanied by Heenan saying, no, he tried to escape. And, everything those two did was gold. You dream as a commentator, myself and Matthew work as commentators together, but you dream of having that kind of palpable chemistry that those two had. Mm. And every time Gorilla was with somebody else, it didn't feel quite right. It didn't feel right. Nothing Heenan did away from Monsoon felt quite right. That's how good they were.
But yeah, I get what you mean. Sorry, I'm being pedantic.
But no, I even think Monsoon and Ventura wasn't as good as Monsoon and Heenan.
You don't think so?
No.
Oh, wow.
I think it's Monsoon and Heenan are the dream combo. And I think that, and I don't think anything Monsoon does away from Heenan is bad, nor do I think anything Monsoon does away from Heenan. Heenan does away from Monsoon is bad. I just think that, it's not as good as those two together. There's just that perfect rhythm. And that's what it is. It's a rhythm. It's Heenan knowing when to talk, Monsoon knowing when to talk and when to shut down Heenan. Sometimes he doesn't, sometimes he does. It's that bark of, will you stop, that just resonates through whenever Heenan has just taken it a touch too far. Like, it's a perfect rhythm.
It was almost like Morecambe and Wise, almost. Monsoon knew when to play the straight man a lot of the time and beat sort of Heenan for the lines and everything else like that. And he was very... I'm trying to think of all the Monsoon calls. There was, will you stop... Hit him right in the...
Will you be serious?
Emperor Glottis. I can't even remember.
Breadbasket.
The breadbasket.
Didn't he birth the whole going to the well once too often?
That sounds like a...
Went to the well once too often, which is whenever you jump off the top rope more than once.
Was it bar the door, Katie? Whatever.
That sounds like a...
When there was a brawl happening. Was that him? that's a real...
Pier 6 brawl?
Yeah, there we go. We need two referees for this match.
just a phalanx of amazing calls that man made over his career, and I remember seeing him at WrestleMania this year ringside for that boxing match for the brawl for all.
Oh, night, God, I thought 99. Yeah, I thought you were getting weird then. Yeah, 99.
No, for 99.
God, it's so sad because he always looked huge and he had Gorilla Monsoon, right? Could be bigger to a certain extent.
Massive.
And they showed this little old man. And the graphic comes up, Gorilla Monsoon, you're like, oh.
But the thunder of the ovation that he gets.
Right. I mean, that's that. It's like it's very similar to, the only thing I compare it to, and this is one of my favourite moments in wrestling, it sounds weird. Rumble 2000's coming up, I'll bring it up then. And it's the Rumble swimsuit contest, whatever, here's some tits. And they bring out, there's a bunch of people there, Sergeant Slaughter or whatever, and they get mild pops. It's like, is it like Andy Richter's there and all this other stuff. It's like, and then... To see this man with a stick making his way, and it's this ripple effect. It's Madison Square Garden. It's lots of young, completely different audience. The Hollywood fashion plate, classy Freddie, and just the ovation he gets. And you think, wow, like that pop was so big. People must have been telling, like, dads must be telling their kids, oh, mate,
he's
cheer,
a guy.
Lad, cheer.
Classy, like, Freddie Blassie.
And then, oh. I can't get an emotional thing about that.
Yeah, wrestling.
I don't know, stuff like that.
No, wrestling's great when it does that to you. I think, and I've talked about this a few times in the last few weeks. Many since I've come here, like, it's okay to love wrestling. We get so jaded by it day to day, but it's nice to be reminded sometimes. You know what? Wrestling's great. Wrestling is emotive, and it makes you feel stuff.
And it's the fact that there was such a big reaction that can only be explained by, like, people telling other people, that's, oh, mate, you should have seen this guy back in the day. He was, and it was like, people who don't even know you, wouldn't have seen any of your matches, wouldn't have seen you know, biting Japanese people's heads whenever, bleeding, causing people to have heart attacks and die on TV.
Because just think when
the stuff he did. But it's like, they're telling, no, you got to respect that. I don't even know who you are, sir, but the respect you're getting, I'm going to join it. Oh,
but
that,
just
that
think when we're
more.
Older, like in about 20, 30 years' time, and we go to a wrestling show and an old man walks towards the ring, and the ovation ripples around the place, and they go, Dad, who's that? And I go, oh, that's Seth Rollins. You won't believe the sort of nonsense he put on Twitter. Boo this man! Boo this man! How much money have you made, sir? You probably won't do that.
mate, I'm sorry to bother you. What, I just always want to say, what, I've always hated you. All right, SmackDown.
Love you, Seth.
That was a good impression.
That's old man Rollins, that is.
That's you doing Ross doing Rollins.
Slash Gruntilda from Banjo-Kazooie.
Yeah, there you go.
Slash Ross. Doing Seth.
What's that so well? He doesn't even play video games. This is FIFA. Anyway, back to the hottest action series on network TV today, to quote Michael Cole.
Shasta McNasty.
We're in Long Island, New York, and we start off with the Kane X-Pac combo entrance, which is organ, 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 break it down, doodle-doo-doo, which I still like. X-Pac is still drinking the green drink that gets no name.
What is the deal with this? Is it maybe he's fueled by it? Maybe it's some weird sort of battery chemical that he needs to, so therefore they can't reference it too much.
You know, if you'd said that back in the day, like, oh, who would ever drink that? Nowadays, it's like, oh God, give me that.
Do we think?
Give me that battery.
Actually, I was about to say, do we think that it's because it's on the network and it's cut out? But then no, because all the advertisers are in place.
Yeah.
Like, unless this company turned out to be an absolute like a slave driving beverage company, I don't know.
Yeah, the secret ingredient was kids.
I assume that was Jesse Ventura said it, and they had to cut it out part of the lawsuit. Mm. That's a great joke for some people.
Jesse Ventura presents thermite paint energy drink.
9/11 was an inside job.
X-Pac challenged the Acolytes to a four-way match at the upcoming pay-per-view, which is No Mercy, which is in 11 days' time or 10 days' time. They never say it's a week on Sunday. It's a very WWF thing to...
Does it feel like we've only just had a pay-per-view?
We have. And even before, ignoring Rebellion, it feels like, wasn't a forgiven just a week ago. All has happened.
It was, yeah. I think it was... Actually, do you know what? Now I'm thinking about it. It's 2 weeks away. So we're going to get four episodes
of SmackDown. I did not say 2 weeks. I said 10 days.
Oh, 10 days, even worse.
Sick the script.
So, like, we're a week and a bit away. If you need to cough, mate, just cough. It's fine. As long as we're not eating.
I don't know why I'm coughing.
It's all right. You're allowed to. Yeah. You only smoke 30 a day. I'm glad
I look like I smoke 30 a day.
I'm glad you're down from 35.
So, X-Pac is wanting to prove himself. That's why he's had the four-way, as opposed to the tag match. Tonight, they're going to prove themselves against the other former mystery tag team of Midian and Violet Beauregard from Willy Wonka the Chocolate Factory. The Purple Light doing Poor Viscera no favours.
He wears black because it's slimming. You should see him in pastel. Oh, he's a chunky boy. He's a chongus.
Good job selling. How about X-Pac feels it getting beat up all the time? Wants to prove himself in the Land of the Giants, as the Dwarf keeps on calling itself. And it's, you know, coincidentally, Land of the Giants is the second hottest action series on network TV. And it's a human storyline. X-Pac friends
is,
with Kane, but he don't like, oh, you know, you want to be, you know, with your friends condescending to you. Like,
yeah, you want to be able to stand on your own two feet. So that's what we're building to, a match at No Mercy. Right. And it's a fatal four-way match. It's not a tag team match. It's a fatal four-way match.
I think it's elimination match.
Four-way elimination match. It's Kane versus X-Pac versus Farouk versus Bradshaw.
Yeah.
I don't know whether they've announced it yet, but we're announcing it now on their behalf.
They have.
We're basically the Ryan Satin of 1999. We're leaking it early.
How dare you say his real name? Ryan Satan is what I'm saying. And Jack laughs every time, so we know it's a joke. But still people are like, no, it's a Satin, Matthew. Thanks. X-Pac beats up Midian. But anyone could do that, so he wants Big Vis. Doesn't want to tag out to Kane, so Kane has to end up saving him by making the blind tag, drop-kicking Viscera out of the ring, which must have been very comfortable, and chokeslam Midian, which was the opposite of what X-Pac wanted. So I'm still a bit mad at him. That's why he wants a four-way match. And while they're bickering, the Acolytes, to no pop whatsoever, beat them both up with the fearsome backdrop neckbreaker, which is nowhere near as effective or cool looking as a double powerbomb.
No way. I mean, why did they swap this out? Are they started doing the double powerbomb yet?
Yeah.
I think they
saw the 3D and went, ooh, we'll have some of that.
Oh, God. Just trying to shut down the Dudleys. Oh, we'll have your 3D, mate.
Oh, the 2D. Not quite the same as it. Backstage, The Rock and Kevin Kelly. What I believe is Kevin Kelly's first SmackDown appearance. And if it isn't, then I must have forgotten him because he is a very forgettable...
Was he not in the pilot?
That doesn't count.
Yeah, okay. Fair point, well made. I think the other time he was a backstage guy. Because I think, yeah, Lillian Garcia normally took the... backstage duties on her own. So Kevin Kelly. Oh, no, that's a lie because Terry Taylor was there last week. And
yeah,
this week.
Terrible Taylor. He'll be back in this one as well.
Poor Terrible Taylor.
So it's worth mentioning Kevin Kelly's. We've done the last few episodes when someone news appeared and we've gone, oh, they're crap. Kevin Kelly still wrestled after this on the indies. He was an independent wrestler. And it's always funny because he said in interviews that the indies always saw him as the WWF guy. And the WWF always treated him like he was the indie guy.
Oh, man.
But I don't think I've ever seen him wrestle. And I literally cannot imagine him wrestling in any shape or form. Because he has next door Christian neighbor written all over him.
Yeah.
I cannot see this guy as a wrestler at all.
I have never seen Kevin Kelly in wrestling attire. The idea that Kevin Kelly is a wrestler is actually news to me as I sit here right now. I had no idea that Kevin Kelly worked as a wrestler.
And he must have gotten that every year for the past 20 years.
I typed in Kevin Kelly wrestler, and I've been given pictures of Nails.
Oh. Yeah, fun fact, Nails...
is Kevin Kelly.
The only thing he nailed was Vince McMahon backstage.
Oh.
Was it real name? Yeah, well, his real name's not Nails, obviously, but his... whatever name he used.
Kevin Warhol.
You know how wrestlers are. It was Kevin Kelly.
Kevin
so
Wakeholes.
There are two Kevin Kellys in wrestling.
Right, that explains why I can't find any pictures of wrestler Kevin Kelly as opposed
Put
to...
Hermy.
Kevin Hermy.
That's what Rock would call him. Shut up, Hermy.
Oh, yes, because... that was it. So The Rock goes through a phase of absolutely tearing Kevin Kelly apart.
Yeah.
Calling him an ugly hermaphrodite. One of many things on the wrestling show in the late 90s that has not aged that well.
Yeah.
A title match coming up will be very similar.
Yeah, moving on from that, though. He would... there was one interview we went, hurt. Kelly, you're too ugly for TV. And he just drapes a coat over him. And then he just stands there with the mic, his hand out the microphone interview. Rock just carries on like a handstand.
Just absolutely buried. Buried Kevin Kelly.
He was pre-coachman. Anyway, moving on from Kelly. Oh, no, actually, one little point there. Apparently, of course, Wikipedia page is part of the writing team and contributing ideas. He's the guy who came up with the, hey, I've got an idea for the Steph angle.
Oh, really? So he's
apparently
the one,
it was him.
He's the one that threw the storyline Hail Mary to get them out of the wedding.
You know that Triple H guy? Yeah. Oh, it's good. Then they fired him a year later.
Oh, bless him. Yeah, so in this bit of a spiel, The Rock hits all his catchphrases, sells some T-shirts. He's plugging his match with Val Venus later on.
Yeah, he does not sound interested at all.
Really doesn't.
With the interview, with the match he has with the British Bulldog coming up. He only gets one bit and he goes, yeah, your bark sounds like this. And Rock says, yeah, whatever. And he has more animosity and anger and passion towards Val Venus taking his rock sock cock. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. I got that all out in one take. And I get why some look at Rock and think, yeah, if he did not want to put you over, you would get the... Because I think we said it before, seeing another people criticized for, I'm just going to destroy you verbally and whatever. But it was always the...
in 99, people, Rock's doing this, but usually people go, oh yeah, whatever, beat you up. He gives Bulldog nothing here. And you look at Bulldog and he's held together with string and prayer and go, yay. He needed help from The Rock.
The Rock for, a lot of people accuse The Rock of burying Billy Gunn. But like, he devoted an entire 25 minutes on Raw one night to a bit about Billy Gunn praying to God. Like, and whereas
Billy,
yeah, that's it, Bob, my name, it doesn't matter what your name is. But they say that the one thing the worst than being insulted is not being talked about in a position like that. So the fact that Rock gives Bulldog nothing is actually a more cutting insult than 20 minutes talking about you praying to God about fighting The Rock.
Right. But I mean, that's a good thing there. But like, there's like Billy Gunn's like, The Rock, I'm going to beat you because I'm Mr. S. The Rock, God hates you. It's hardly a fair fight, is it?
Even God hates you. Yeah, so yeah, a lot of plugs for Val Venis. Well, or whether maybe he thought he'll have to push a little bit harder to get the idea of Rock versus Val Venis over as a main event. Because this is the main event of the night.
Oh, Rock versus Val. You wait. But don't let that distract you, Tom. As we go to break, what's this? Warning, poisonous snakes. Oh, that's a room every building should have across America. Better not go in there, Tom.
Oh, my. Yeah, so
let's just pretend that didn't happen and move on, question it.
We have a locker room full of, we don't know what's in there, but we know someone's gone to the trouble of engraving a sign that says poisonous snakes. You know, your standard, as Matthew rightly said, your standard poisonous snake room that exists in every arena up and down free America.
Yeah. And then you open it up and you're like, I don't know what I expected.
Yeah, I don't know why I'm upset by what I'm seeing in here.
We'll come back from break and make thanks to The Rock for his kind words that he's going to get the cock Rock sock. And Rock ignores him. So we need to go to Mick talking to Lillian. And he's happy The Rock's going to fight his battles for him with Val Venis. But Mankind doesn't want to sit his fat ass managing him. So he'll take Bulldog tonight. And he starts doing that for the dozens.
A dozen.
And I'm going to take that mic and I'm gonna hit you with it. So that's a bit of continuity from last week. I'm probably getting that lovely line in. So yeah, Foley, the crowd's getting it. It's sad that he's had to lower his standards basically for the crowd to pop.
Yeah, he's too clever for this world at this point.
We get you, Mick.
But like, there's a couple of signs in the crowd this week that suggest that some people are cottoning on.
Mick's like, oh, it's all catchphrases, right? Dozens and dozens. Right, thank you.
At this point. You know, I think a lot of people accuse like 2019 of being like the generation of the short attention span. But like 1999, we were just living for catchphrases and tiny car crash matches.
Well, I mean, it was so fast-paced, you could only really remember the catchphrases.
Yeah, it's true.
Speaking of catchphrases, do-do-do-do.
Oh, you did not know.
Do, new, new, new.
Your bottom better ring home.
Do, and so on. So it's the Outlaws versus the Hollies at No Mercy, which makes sense. The Hollies got mad at Edge and Christian getting the title shot at Unforgiven when there wasn't any time on TV to have a proper tag team build-up, so which Outlaws were like, all right, who wants some?
Just hoid them out there.
And they thought, what the hell? Might as well beat up the New Age Outlaws until they get it. Good strategy.
Yeah, worked.
And get New Age Outlaws doing their thing in the ring. And by the way, for years, I wasn't quite sure what Dog was saying at this bit. Because he goes, like, doggy style. And then he goes, I'm glad he said it on this one. Let's see if we can't make a little noise up in this biatch. That's what he's saying. I think maybe they started censoring it or letting the crowd do it. Or it's always been weird the way he said it at the end to make it sound kind of distorted or censored. I had no idea what he was saying.
Really?
Up in the bleep! You know.
I think because you say it so often, it just sort of blurs, doesn't it?
Well, up in this biatch was not an expression that I was familiar with as a kid, so I'm like, what?
Do you know, what around school saying, up in this biatch?
Like
up
that.
Up in this biatch! If you say something over and over again, you tend just to start just changing the cadence of it.
Because if I'd done it, I would have said it how I heard it on TV and go, up in this minute. And people thought, are you all right, mate? Anyway, Lola explains the Hollies think they weigh more than 400 pounds. Let's see if it'll help them.
Jerry Lawler ruined the illusion that they were actually 400 pounds by over-explaining it. Lawler didn't need to do that. I enjoyed Lawler going, they're blatantly 400 pounds. Look at the size of them. They're huge. You know? With him going, no, they just think they are. No! It's like, wrestling's fun when you suspend disbelief completely.
Yeah.
I have so much more fun on commentary, as do you, when we completely suspend our disbelief. When a wrestler comes out in a different gimmick and we act like it's a brand new debutant to the area.
Well, speaking of Benji, when he's in Rise, he is the heavier one. He's the heavyweight. And who's that tiny partner he has?
Joe Rage.
The dwarf, aye.
Yeah, he's tiny.
Oh, he's like a strong wind could knock him down, bless him.
You need to look up pictures of the Brothers of Rage and you will completely get this reference.
The joke is Benji is small and...
All right, Lawler, Christ,
do you remember that show we were at where we were chanting that? Benji is small and Joe Rage is tall. That's the joke. That's the joke. Me and Matthew at a wrestling show chanting that at the Brothers of Rage. One's a very tall man, one's a very small man. That's the joke. That was it. We I think we'd had a drink by that point. Did we have a drink to drink at that point? More than
yes.
likely.
Yeah. I don't know why I even pretend there, but yes.
Cream crackered.
And then it's just like a Lance Storm, like, whoop. I think you will find that Benji is... Anyway. Someone who definitely doesn't weigh 400 pounds is Road Dogg, as he's wearing his finest mafia sweatsuit. He's going to go out to a job and then call in a hit on the way back.
He absolutely never needed to get into any decent shape in his life ever, because his entire gimmick is that he wears long trousers and literally only exposes his arms.
Yeah, and has dreadlocks and... What's it called, Rose? No, wait, what is that? What would you call that?
Braids.
Yeah, that's the
braided
word.
Braided hair, didn't he?
Shades of Bo Derek.
He was very Bo Derek.
Bo Derek hair, mafia sweatsuit, and Snoop Dogg lines. The third highest selling merch seller of the Attitude Era.
And Snoop Dogg lines, if you get my drift.
Oh.
Hashtag back problem.
All right. And they discussed the upcoming mud wrestling match. And Lawler asks, have you been to those clubs with the mud wrestling? And Cole goes, no, I'm happily married. Lawler goes, oh, your wife's not.
Yeah, oh yeah, by the way, there's a mud wrestling match happening tonight.
Oh, by the way, just you wait, ladies and gentlemen, strap in. Holly lets Crash beat up Dog and distracts the referee. Billy Gunn gets very mad. So Holly comes off the top rope with the flying nothing. But luckily, Road Dogg gets his foot up. Oh, that would have looked silly. The Duking and Jiving, Shake Rutland Roll. I think that's the official name, actually, by Michael Cole. And the shaky knee drop, I don't think I've ever had a name. And the flying fat ass bump. You know what I mean? But you know, these are not official names.
I'm sure,
at all.
I thought, yeah, the Shake, Rattle and Roll is definitely the name of. Because if you look.
Shake, Rattle and Roll is the name on the WrestleMania 2000.
Any wrestling game, that is called the Shake. I'm sure it's called the Shake, Rattle and Roll.
The punches, yeah. Shaky knee drop. Crash Holly tries to interfere, but Gunn gets him. But this allows Hardcore Holly to hit the Falcon Arrow. And as we all know, no one kicks out the Falcon Arrow.
No, indeed.
The Hollies yell at Cole that they're super heavyweights and be treated seriously and shut up Lawler for killing the joke, allowing New Age Outlaws to get their heat back by the pay-per-view.
By the pay-per-view, can watch the Hollies versus the Outlaws.
Yes.
That's money!
I just realised I brought up the ref WrestleMania 2000. For the first time, I think I realised, I tweeted about it because it was the anniversary of the release of the game, I think, in North America. On the UK. And, you know, having only a few months after WF Attitude came out, as we discussed in the podcast before, and it was a time I told it on this podcast, and I realised I was very happy to see all the people going, I've heard this story before because you told it with Tom, about the guy that my mum was seeing that month. And it had the unintended effect, as everyone just said, have you just called your mum out for being a slag? I'm like, no!
You blatantly have,
I'm very proud of what my mum could get at that point. You know?
What my mum could get!
My mum knew what she wanted and she knew how to get it. Like, is that a thing we should be praising?
She would go to Monaco's with laser vision like Predator to pick out the concubine of her choosing for that evening. He looks like he can afford an N64 game.
Hey, they were 50 quid and 99.
Very expensive at that point.
He was around the club with like two Blockbuster vouchers. Oh, here we go.
She saw two HMV vouchers sticking out of his pocket and went, he's the one for me.
That's it.
He'll satisfy my son.
Eiffel 60. Oh, Jesus Christ. Eiffel 65 came on and that was it.
Very loud.
For the third time that night.
Very loud, per your mum's instructions.
Like to move on.
Oh God! What you like, Matthew?
God, get look at this. It's next segment's Mark Henry's first sex therapy.
Excellent. Right, this was peak Attitude Era. Hit the gong, peak Attitude Era. This
gong.
Was. Mark Henry's sex therapy session.
Mark Henry wearing the Canadian tuxedo. Jeans up top, jeans up bottom.
And of course, because this is Mark Henry, because this is a sex therapy session, he immediately starts feeling up the therapist.
I was gonna say, yeah, it's a sexy female therapist. Wee.
Getting her legs out and going, oh, Mark, tell me about your sexual desires.
And he goes, well, tell me about your first sexual encounter. Well, it was dark and I was all alone.
That's quite good.
He goes, seriously, Mark? Goes, all right.
Quite a good masturbation joke, that, though. I like that.
And he goes, I was 8. And he goes, all right. Who was it? My sister. When was the last time you had sex with your sister? Day before yesterday. And the crowd, the noise, oof.
That's pretty much exactly how we all felt.
Long Island, New York, oof.
Here's the thing, right? I don't know who the actress was playing the therapist. She ruined the gag. She ruined the gag. Because he went, I had sex with my sister. And she went, oh, I can't believe it. You're surely still not doing that now. When was the last time you had sex with your sister? And then it was, yesterday. Like, she ruined the gag completely. She stomped all over it, yeah. Like, in the Attitude Era, are we still on, like, very old film tape, which is very expensive? Like, one take, that's it, we've got to go, we can't do that again. She stomps all over the gag. It annoyed me. But this will carry on. I think we'll see more from the, not tonight, but I do believe this leads to a fairly obvious, hilarious punchline with the sex therapy sessions with Mark Henry. It certainly does.
It's like the blob that had sex with everything. Did you have sex with Mae Young? Yeah, I had sex with everything. You have sex with your sister? I had sex with everything.
My name is the blob that had sex with everything.
You had sex with Mr. Ass? I had sex with
Matthew's mom. I bought in WrestleMania 2000. What more do you want?
I'm so glad my mum's not familiar with like technology or podcast. She listens to this. She listens to the Cultaholic one.
Oh,
the proper one. So I'm like, I didn't realise this because she wanted to see what apparently you had makeup on. I'm like, oh, Danhausen. Right, yeah, okay. That's just a foundation, mum. Jesus. But yeah, she'll probably be listening to this.
She'll figure it out.
She's like, no, I remember SmackDown. What, is that still on the... She'll hear the first thing you think it's not. I think it's serious. Is SmackDown still on the air?
It's like, I just love watching SmackDown, Matthew. I found this podcast that talks about what happened to SmackDown. And I swear that's you talking on it.
I just thought it would be one of those stories that would make people relate to me more. Turns out no one could relate to this story.
Oh, no. Do you know what, mate? Do you know what? If people are saying, no, we cannot relate to a man dating our mother who tried to win our affection with gifts, they are liars. That is an absolute lie. Like, for a brief time, in my younger years, I dated a young lady who had a child, right? I tried to buy affection from that child. I bought him sweets. I bought him toys. He was spoiled Christmas. Honestly, for similar reasons why your mum's former concubine bought you WrestleMania 2000.
Concubine, you bastard. I was like, that's a nice story, Tom. Like, concubine.
There's Thomas the Tank. Now turn that up nice and loud. I need to pop upstairs. Concubine's a great word.
I love concubines in any of the situation apart from this one. Anyway, thank you for relating. Moving on. Sex addiction is very serious. If you have related to any of the issues of the storyline, you can ring up this number. Now time for mud wrestling. Not just mud wrestling. Mud wrestling sponsored by Dino Crisis, Skittles and Lugs for your feet. So there's a little mud ring next to the stage. And here comes Jeff Jarrett with what appears to be one of those things you get at festivals when it's raining too hard.
What, cold?
It's just the deep power of a cold.
Deep regret for the £300 you've spent. An undying hatred for the camper next to you.
A 99 ice cream that costs a fiver, despite the name. He tells Miss Kitty she's resting tonight and they only win the match via top removal. And she seems very upset. Why she would expect anything less from Jeff Jarrett, I've no idea. But what a great character I've realised over this last few weeks of Jeff Jarrett. He's giving WWF is giving the audience all the TNA and the women exploitation they want. And WWF can go, oh man, what a dastardly heel to explain to the advertisers. No. It's just a coincidence that this evil, rotten, scummy, whatever blokey happens to have the same things that these red-blooded Americans want to see all the time.
I mean, Jeff Jarrett, who, as we've discussed on this podcast, is indeed criminally insane.
Criminally insane.
I applaud him this week for watching two women wrestle in mud and not feel the urge to jump in and put one of them in a figure four. Like, he did really well this week. I'm really proud of him.
The only thing he hates more than women is mud. So saying,
I ain't getting
it's like garlic to Dracula.
I ain't getting myself muddy.
Outlaw mud wrestling show. Terry Taylor is backstage. Get in the rooster and the bulldog.
Yes! And, oh, yes!
I know. This is like the highlight. This is like seeing Freddie Blassie at Rumble 2000. Or alternately, not my dad with WrestleMania 2000. And damn it. Of all the running jokes are coming back in the ass.
Your favourite line from this.
Oh, well, no, just you wait. I've got a song here.
Okay, mate. Hit me with this song.
Davey with them acid-washed jeans, shirts about the sleeves. The rooster was interviewing him. He hit the step, she hit the floor. Next thing you know, ratings got low. I wrote that down. So Bulldog is here to tell us that he, officially, definitely from the Northwest, because he doesn't care about The Rock.
I don't care if The Rock dies.
I don't even care about Mankind. What he does care about, It's a title shot. And then Mankind attacks him to prevent people switching over to Shasty.
He also doesn't care about Stephanie.
I couldn't care. That's just part one of the Bulldog saga we're getting into.
Oh, it gets better later.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
The poisonous snakes room.
Oh, yeah, that famous poisonous snakes room.
That's still there. The room has not moved, as rooms tend to do. I think this is dying for someone to go, whoa, I thought the referee union storyline was over. But Vince McMahon wouldn't have that type of comment there. So instead, we'll move on to Edge and Christian coming through the crowd. This may be the first time they've done that on SmackDown, unless I've missed something. Maybe they've had they've had the entrances cut out.
No, they've done it before. They've always come through the crowd. They've yet to come through the entranceway.
It's the first time I've noticed it. They are 2-0 in the tit. That's the Terry invitation. And they're taking on the New Brood, which is the Hardys with the Brood entrance and Hardys music, but no Gangrel. They're getting there, slowly getting away from Gangrel. Before we hit this match, Terry Reynolds comes out. And she talks. And I swear that they bungled this and they had to then re-record it because there's no pop or crowd shots when she's talking. Oh. And maybe it's, or maybe not, because she's not very good at talking. Her Marlena days are definitely over for her. And she goes, the TIT is going to, you want it? I guess like you want sex.
Yeah.
And there's nothing there. It's either been reshot because her mic wasn't working. Or was reshot because her mic was working. She's just terrible, and it's very ill-fitting. Or it's not convincing at all
because
her facelift is older than these tag teams. Do you want it? Thanks. Ooh, ooh.
Do you want it?
Ooh, a melted Barbie doll. Get in. Oh, get out the microwave, love.
You've got to bear in mind that Vince Russo, probably the architect of this concept, has now left the company. suddenly it's like your main guy for writing smut is no longer around.
True, but it's not like an unfinished Tolkien novel. Like, we don't know what he wanted. It's like, it's called Tit, and it's a tournament with Terry. That's it. Oh, and then she ends with her line, "May the best team win, me," because her team is her two boobs. Again, nothing. It could be because it's crap.
It could just be because the lines are bad. It could just be, as you say, I mean, there's nothing there that made me think it was a re-record. Sometimes you can see the lighting changes or the mic volume is slightly different. You can normally tell if something's been re-recorded. You can normally tell. Nothing really jumped out at me as like, oh, doesn't seem right. I might have another look.
I bet the person who read it is like Tom. Every editor lives to hear.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, I imagine that it is.
Anyway, so far, only Lawler's focused on the whole tit thing because Edge Christian versus Hardys is good.
This is what threw me off. In this era, we have an absolute stormer of a match.
Yeah. Texas Tornado rules to make it a bit more spicy. And we really get to appreciate how good these two were with moves compared to the other move styles of the rest of the roster. Because nowadays, you take for granted getting NXT and everyone's doing kickflip McFlips, apron bumps and all the rest. Here's the Hardy Boys and Edge Christian killing each other for about 5 minutes.
NXT every week is, as you say, five star matches which start from the off. Like, this feels like every match with NXT, which is just like balls to the wall, strong performances by everyone involved out there to steal the night.
Yeah, and you can tell this influenced the hell out of later on Three Count, the Young Dragons, all the other tag teams that will come out of WCW. And we get such moves that they're clearly still learning as they're going on, because it's stuff that you don't see from them after this for a while. Double running headbutt to a down Matt Hardy. A flapjack on Matt Hardy onto Jeff Hardy, who stood.
That's class.
I've never seen that before.
That was excellent.
Matt whips on the outside. Matt Hardy whips Christian to the ring apron on the outside, charges. Christian backdrops him. Matt bounces off the ropes and gives him the Rey Mysterio Eddie Guerrero DDT on the outside.
That was beautiful. Yeah. Absolutely
and
beautiful.
Poetry Motion gets two. Apparently the move on the outside took Edge out for 2 weeks with a stinger.
Really?
They got in the corner of them. And if they say it must be true, maybe one of those Road Dogg stingers.
Well, yikes, one of them, is it?
I heard that Edge Cake Quick album.
Well, bear in mind, we're 2 weeks away from the ladder match.
Right.
So he obviously got better pretty quick.
Yeah. Jeff climbs a barricade and took Christian out. The camera missed it because he wasn't expecting it, so got a replay. I think it's added to the craziness. Even Kevin Dunn can't keep up with the Hardys.
You've got to bear in mind that they have these camera guys and these production guys have had weeks of like slow, middle-of-the-ring affairs where suddenly you've got four guys that are going beyond third gear. Like, right. You've got to change your style frantically to keep up with it.
Yeah, and Christian blocks a double backdrop, reverse DDT on both guys. It's a close two, and the crowd goes, ooh, because that's been Christian's kind of finish for a bit. Stacked up superplex on the Matt Hardy, but Jeff waits until Edge and Christian are both down from the stacked superplex to give one of them the Swanton Bomb and pin him 1-2-3. Woof. They did nothing to get the crowd into it, but the style sticks out so well that they're like,
yeah.
Well, I don't fully understand what I just saw, but that was very nice.
Yeah, I think that even if they tried to get the crowd into it, I think the crowd would have been... Not because they didn't like it, but I think this is so different to what the crowd normally presented, which is sort of like women shaking their assets and Road Dogg humping a man. Mm-hmm. You know, that's
that was just segment one.
That's the first 10 minutes of this show. But that's what they're used to. Yeah. So this was a bit of a cold bath, I think, for the crowd.
Yeah,
and not a disrespect to these guys at all, who absolutely went for it.
And it's funny, almost. It's like it's the only thing in this era where it's like, hey, it's me. Look at my pup. Can you move out the way, love? I want to see the wrestlers.
Yeah.
It's me, Terry. Go away. I'm sure you're nice.
She was very much the anchor that made this a very attitude feeling thing.
She's the barnacle.
She is the barnacle. Sorry, Terry.
I loved her and Goldust. Her as Marlena.
Oh, God. I mean, cigar chomping Marlena was phenomenal. Oh.
Do the sign of the cross just thinking about it. But this is 99 and she's just like, oh, it's her.
It's a bit like, let's find Terry something to do. Let's play with those tag teams. They might, you know, that'll keep her busy for a bit. Because bear in mind, like, I genuinely believe this wasn't a vehicle to get the Hardys and the Brood over. This was a vehicle, I think, to keep Terry in the mix. I genuinely believe that.
You think so?
Yeah.
No, I think it's two birds with one stone.
I'd like to think otherwise, but I think the primary thing is, hey, we're going to put you with Terry. Isn't that cool? Isn't that cool, guys? We're going to put you with Terry.
You guys have a lot of match and you kill each other and you'll be remembered forever.
Terry Runnels.
But then once the ladder match happened, I think everybody went, oh, wow. Because bear in mind, the ladder match was born out of a rivalry to win Terry's services. And then after this, the rival, the story was going to be Terry Runnels managing a tag team. But that so blended away. Like, they moved away from that almost immediately the following night on Raw. Mm. Like, the whole reason this feud happened, they just binned off immediately. We'll get to it.
It's good because, you know, she's a proper manager of champions, because the last team she had before this was the Mean Street Posse. Anyway, moving on from that, Val Venus backstage is admiring Rocco in his tight. And it is a bizarre homage to Mark Wahlberg and Boogie Nights, as far as I'm concerned. Let me whip it out. Let me. Carl's like, yeah, see his dick. And it's the sock. It's like, boo, you're a heel.
Joey Ryan's watching somewhere going, oh, this is a great character. One day I could get that over.
One day I'm going to make more money taking one bump a match than I have my entire rest of my career.
Incidentally, the wrestling world stood in awe this week as recording when Ken Shamrock got flipped by Joey Ryan's dong on Impact Wrestling.
I'm glad that you liked it.
I was in awe. I was when I saw it was about to happen, I thought, there is no way Ken Shamrock. Oh my God, he is! All right! Incredible! I was just in awe of the fact that former UFC champion Ken Shamrock rolled with that. I'm not even mad.
He literally rolled with it.
I'm not even mad.
Ken Shamrock wouldn't lose to Curtis Hughes, but he will take a dick.
But he will sell for Joey Ryan's penis.
We'll leave a company to get away from Mr. Hughes. That's right. That's what's not kayfabe on this podcast.
Oh, man.
He's coming to the end of his career, by the way. We'll get the getting his bag in the next week. But now it's time for Jeff Jarrett in his Dexter serial killer plastic outfit to come out here. Brings the Ivory Women's Champion out with him. And you think, okay, that's a bit weird. Jeff Jarrett brings out the mud, whilst ignoring the voices in his head going, kill her, kill her. And Miss Kitty in Bikini comes out and Jeff Jarrett reveals Ivory is the opponent. Ivory's apparently being tricked. Why would you trust Jeff Jarrett? If you had... I almost said Ivory's then. I was going, ovaries.
Ivories.
Jeez. Yeah,
check out
elephant.
Her ivories.
And then Jeff Jarrett is, again, his crazy self here. Mud, the lowest thing on earth, just like women.
Oh, my God.
Lots of
this
mud here.
This hasn't aged well.
Lots of mud, lots of ass, lots of titties. And stay tuned, because after this, that's right, Shasta McNasty. Kitty's titties are unleashed, but you can't see them because mud is Earth's sensor.
Ivory is furious at the end of this. Like, she's shouting at Jeff Jarrett, annoyed that he put her through this match. Yet, 4 minutes ago, she was happily walking down to the ring to take part in this. You make your own problems
she
there,
got
Ivory.
Tricked.
She got tricked into what? I'm just going to have a wrestling match. I mean, it's not in the main ring. It's on a little ring to the side that's full of mud.
Yeah.
Next to a guy who's advertised a mud wrestling match for the night. I'm sure it's all going to be fine.
Jeff Jarrett, I'm criminally insane and hate women. Hey, Ivory!
I'm sure this is fine.
And Ivory's like, you can't trick me. And so you got a set of car keys. I was like, ching, ching, ching. Ooh!
And it's the women's champion, that is, defending her title in a mud wrestling match. Imagine putting Becky Lynch in a mud wrestling match in 2019. Honest to God. For one, Becky would no doubt say, how about... You can F off.
There you go. But we're getting the best of the show. Then Fabulous Moolah and Mae Young try to get Jeff Jarrett. And Jeff's like, no, and casually kicks them in. And Lawler says, it's like watching the dinosaurs fall in the La Brea tar pit.
That was a great line.
I think that was a killer line. That spot existed just for Lawler to get that line in. And then China sneaks in, and Jeff Jarrett's going, and kicks Jeff Jarrett off the stage. Jeff Jarrett takes a flip bump into the mud ring.
Beautiful bump from Jeff into the mud.
Yeah.
And then I think Moolah and Mae Young trying to rip his dungarees off after that. That seems to be the thing you do.
Yeah, that's the thing that's come up and just basically assault you, as we saw with Lawler. A bump last week. I forgot about it.
Lawler and Mae Young just. I genuinely think they were shooting on Lawler.
And Lola wasn't even shooting to get back. He just stood up. And she slipped like an old biddy on an icy surface.
If that had been 2019, we'd have done a news video on that. Moolah and Mae Young shoot on Lawler. That'd have been a news video, without a doubt.
The bump she takes, I swear to God.
Jesus Christ. He cracks her skull open.
Jeff Hardy would have taken that bump. Anyway, backstage, the Bulldog is walking in his jeans. So we get the recap we've been waiting for, Tom. Last Saturday was Rebellion.
Oh, my God.
Here is the transcript, word for word, as typed out by me. Are you ready?
Oh, mate, I'm born ready.
In case if you listen to this podcast, you're not familiar with this bit. Backstage Rebellion, Sonny Birmingham.
Have you written down, like, who's who? Can we perform this together?
Yeah. Well, the capital letter is Bulldog, because he's always yelling, and the lowercase is, well, Vince McMahon.
Who do you want to be? Do you want to be Bulldog?
Yeah.
Okay, you be Bulldog. Really, I'll be Vince. Because you want to rip this. Okay.
Okay.
Right, so backstage, Vince McMahon is stood with Shane. They've just had an interview, haven't they? If I remember correctly. Cameras follow Bulldog, storms up to Vince McMahon and says,
"Where's my title shot?"
There's a pause.
"Where's my title shot? People came out to see me and wrestle Triple H."
That's how he says it.
"Where's my title shot?"
You had your title shot.
"You call that a title shot?"
Look, The Rock was the referee. You've had your title shot.
"You had The Rock as the referee? Not me."
Please calm down.
Throws bin. "I'm not going to calm down."
Stephanie! Give me a medic! Give me a medic! And scene.
"You had The Rock as the referee, not me."
"I wanted to be the referee in my own match."
"Where's my talent show and referee shirt?"
"Where's my referee? You call that a referee? Oh, God. You call my... Where's my title shot? You call that a title shot?" Absolute history-making lines from the Bulldog.
God.
"Call that a title shot? Call that a knife?"
It's just like the Bart Simpson bit where obviously they go, "Where's my spy camera? Where's my title shot?
You call that a spy camera?" Bulldog. And it's just Bulldog just hoying a bin. And you just hear thunk. And then Steph's on the floor. Like, she must be made of steel. Like, the noise it made.
Yes, look, title shot. Yeet.
I want to watch.
That's the noise you make.
I want to see the camera that was facing Stephanie at that point. And I want to watch as Vince McMahon and Bulldog are having this back and forth. They're looking to one eye, waiting for Stephanie to lie on the ground. And then for Bulldog just to wang a bin at the lockers. I want to see that go down. I think also at that show, didn't Bulldog... God. Bulldog and China had a little bit of a back and forth as well.
Bulldog was all over this show.
China called Bulldog the ass end of a dog. And then Bulldog, I think, hits her with a running power slam later on. He was all over the shop in this one. He really
bless
was,
him.
As he was in life.
Well, it was in the prime of his career, so I'll throw him out four times. So last Monday, Bulldog apologised for Vince putting Stephanie in a position to get hurt.
"I'm sorry, I didn't do it sooner."
I wouldn't put my daughter in a locker room full of wrestlers.
I like how that's his complaint.
Yeah, sadly didn't add, I've met him. Backstage, even worse than that, Test is sad. Tells her Stephanie has post-concussion syndrome and the wedding is off. She doesn't even recognise him.
Doesn't even know who I am, and then leaves.
I tell you what, I wouldn't recognise you either if I was your wife-to-be. And you were backstage talking to Freebird Michael Hayes about the wedding being off and you being sad, when you should be beating Bulldog to a bloody stump.
Do you know what? That is the bit that is lost in this. Like, your wife-to-be just got brained by Bulldog. And what are you doing?
Yeah.
You are sat feeling sad that, oh, she doesn't know who I am. You're a wrestler! Go out there and kick his head in. And like, and this is Test's problem, right? I know you don't speak ill of the dead, but Test was a gutless moron at this point. And that was really sad because we would see something else rather major again happen to Test. And he'd go all Milhouse about it. Like, oh, geez. Oh, that's a shame. He's like Milhouse's dad of wrestlers. Oh, that's a shame that happened. He doesn't go after anybody.
Yeah, she, before the bin... Her husband-to-be was Test. She opened her eyes and saw Shorty G and went back to sleep. Shane McMahon says she has amnesia, and he explains it's the kind that you only find on TV shows. So give her a week and she'll be all right.
And even then when they go, what do you feel about the Bulldog? And then Shane walks off. So, like, shame a man who has proved in the last few weeks he's good for a rook. Like, he's happy to go and he'll defend the honour of his sisters against the Mean Street posse who call her names. But here's a guy that's attacked your sister. British Bulldogs attacked your sister. You can do anything about it? Nah.
Yeah.
Poor Steph. No one's willing to defend her honour.
Yeah, and if you like this castration of Test's character, you'll love the next few months.
Oh,
just
mate,
let me tell you.
You've got no idea. This man is going to be emasculated within an inch of his life.
If you have stock in the Test brand, sell now.
sell.
Anyway, Bulldog title shot has weighed the ring. Foley has his jacket back, the one that says Rock and Sock. I'm pretty sure that jacket died, and there was a storyline about it a few weeks ago. The Dudleys killed it. Let's pretend that didn't happen. I think they realized, you know what? We don't need the Dudley boys interfering in this. That was a mistake for 1 week. It's weird now. We get Mankind versus Bulldog. It's weird. Mankind's first match in WF, I believe, as a jobber, was getting destroyed by the Bulldog in the 80s.
It was. It broke his jaw.
That's right. And here we are.
Mankind getting destroyed.
Yeah, and they both have the exact same body types at this point, above damage beyond all repair.
Bulldog is so awkward to watch in this.
Yes, he is.
Because he can't bump.
It's weird now. It has all the body manipulation of his own action figure.
Yep. He moves just as well. Yep. Jeez.
Bulldog takes the Tree of Woe.
There's even a point where he takes a suplex on the outside. He does a suplex on the outside. And you can even watch the way he lands. Like, he doesn't land flat back. Like, yep. He lands to the side. This man is knackered.
You're right. He lands flat back. He makes sure his back lands awkwardly. And he tries to make his face land in a pile of drugs. I thought you said we weren't going to say that. I know. Voice in my head saying, why did you say that? We cut out so much of that. Moving on. Long Island has produced more tragedy than Shakespeare. Good line from Lawler. Your suplex on the outside, as Mankind has to take one of those per week. Bless him. And Mankind does a marvellous job here. He knows his way in life. He is the guy that has to make Bulldog look good for the Rock match. He gets absolutely destroyed taking a bump over the ring steps. Because Mankind would always take that bump where it's like, okay, don't, like, fall down and take it with your back. Just run up those steps as fast as you can and just
fly
let gravity
over.
Do the rest. Jeez. Oh,
it was around about this time that Michael Cole said, Bulldog's obsession with winning the title is oozing out of his skin.
I'm saying nothing, Tom.
That's what those spots are on his back. It is his lust for the title shot oozing out of his skin. That's what it is, and nothing else.
As a proud eczema sufferer, I've been given away, yes. All I want is the Cultaholic title.
That's it, mate. I'm on to you. You call that a title shot?
And I think I was saying to you before, it's great seeing footage like this in amazing quality of the network. Probably the best footage you wouldn't get hold of it. Marvellous. I'm looking at 99, you can go, wow, like, the Hollies look great, the Hardys look great, everyone looks young and fresh. Apart from the Bulldog, you go, oh, God, go back to Standard Def.
Yeah. So, he looks very unwell.
It gives Mankind a chair at the head. No DQ for some reason. Whatever. more chin lock action from Bulldog as he needs to rest after that thrilling set of giving Mankind all the moves in the world. Mankind takes a low blow. Still no DQ. Commentators are now blaming the newer, stronger referees.
For not making the call to end the match.
Yeah, it goes for Socko. He dodges it and somehow nails the referee and he can't stop it for a few seconds. Who then gets bumped. And now there's a DQ. Bulldog rams the steps into Mankind's face, brawls through the crowd. Because from the area, Lawler says, oh God, Mick's trying to drag him into his house. Very much trying to make Bulldog look like the monster that they wished him to be, but he's just been miscast.
Really, really has. They're desperate to make him look like a beast. He can't move. Like, I feel it's really sad watching this, actually, because it's like, here's a guy, like, and you can see they can't do any more for him. Like, they put him in the main event of the last pay-per-view. They put him in a match against The Rock, the most over guy in the planet, on pay-per-view in 10 days. He's going in there against the biggest star in wrestling. He can't leave that company and accuse them of not trying. But after that match coming up, like, you can, when you document how fast Bulldog star falls, it's shocking, which we will document from one pay-per-view to another, how far that star falls. It is alarming.
It's one of those situations where we'll get like an old boxer to take on the new upcoming guy. It's like, it is Larry Holmes versus Butter Bean. Okay. Well, thanks for coming. But you said biggest star of the company? I think not. This would not be the B-plus show if it wasn't for Steve Austin making a cameo appearance on the show he's supposed to be a full member of. And here we go. Strap in, lads. Hunting and fishing with Steve Austin and Jim Ross.
This would be a WWE Network show now.
It absolutely would. And I hope you enjoy the sight of Steve Austin shooting a pumpkin with Triple H's official 8x10 on it.
Not even his old official 8x10. Like, it's an old picture of Triple H.
It's the embryonic picture of Triple H, and he shoots it. He shoots it once, and they show it about four times to make this way more interesting than it is. There's nothing going on here. Jim Ross has to go, that's a nice shot. And Austin goes, thanks, pal. And he's like, yeah, I'm going to beat him up. I'm going to do this. I'm training for my battle by firing stuff in the wild.
Why did they feel the need to build Austin versus Triple H by having Triple H dicking around with rattlesnakes?
We are not getting to that. Yeah, go on.
Like, what? I don't get why they felt this is the best way to put this match forward.
Because Austin needed time off.
Yeah, but surely there's other ways.
No, Russo's gone. We don't know what to do.
Right, fair enough.
They asked Austin, what should we do? And he goes, I think I should go out hunting and fishing for a bit, and you can just film me.
I'll go fishing. I'm going to go home and rest. You can just film me resting.
Yeah. And he's like, that sounds like a great idea. And he went, oh my God, they fell for it. I should have asked for more demands. And as you just gave it away there, Tom, however, Triple H goes into the poisonous snake room. Clearly, we know it's the poisonous snake room because it says poisonous snake room on the outside. Tune in to find out. Before that, we get Big Show versus Big Boss Man, but it's before it gets interesting. And that's not mention of draws. Michael Cole keeping us updated. Must have mentioned on Raw what happened because obviously it wasn't shown on the SmackDown last week. And he just said, we're going to keep your data as his condition and see what happens there. He sounds hopeful, but I think many people sound hopeful at these things because I think from what I've heard, it's like the few weeks or so then they know what it's going to be like for the rest of his life. So
yeah,
that's why, you know, I'm not sure how Michael Cole will, get this, you know. He's let's just say his lugs bill is going to be a lot lower. I don't know what he could have said here, but he does it as nicely as possible. And Lawler refrains from making a joke. So
I thought that D'Lo Draws thing happened on SmackDown.
It did. Last week's SmackDown.
But we didn't, but they took it out, presumably. Okay, that makes sense. That explains, was that last
we
week's?
We did, yes.
Okay, that's fine.
We in real time, me and Tom missed out a week because we were very busy. So we're sort of like, yeah. But I have all my notes on my phone. It was last week.
Right.
Maybe that was why it was a...
That's why it's a really short episode of SmackDown.
Damn it. Why didn't we think about that? Oh, well, anyway.
That's why it was a really short episode of SmackDown.
Anyway, this is the death slot match. Boss Man gets sent outside. He's able to crotch Show because he walks over the ropes because he thinks he's big like Bradshaw.
Yeah, Big Show versus Boss Man. We are very nearly at that legendary rivalry that will end the century.
We're not quite there. However, Boss Man is able to hit the Boss Man slam on Big Show. It's nice for two.
That looked great.
It's almost as good as when Mr. Perfect hit the... Oh, what do you call it in WCW? Henningplex. Yeah, and he hits the Henningplex on Giant just because.
Just because I can.
So, yeah. Boss Man's so mad, he beats him up with his stick as the... What? Oh, I get it. I wrote something here. I don't know why I wrote it, so I'll have to figure it out. The inner wrestling community is so mad that he kicked out of the Boss Man slam that they start cheering. When Boss Man beats him up with a stick, they cheer him from behind their copies of Windows 98 and missed. I'm not sure what I was thinking of when I typed that. Sorry, that's absolute crap. Boss Man tries to cuff Show, but he breaks it because he's big. Yep, thanks for coming. Moving on to the important bit of the show, Triple H is in the poisonous snake room.
Oh, this is special. This is special.
The race explains he's a trapper, not a hunter. He's a lover, not a fighter.
I'm a trapper, not a hunter. Aren't they the same? Thing?
How dare you bemoan poison snake Triple H? He is a hunter. It's in his name.
Hunter. Exactly.
He puts a snake in a bag while giving a speech and then hammers the snake in a bag that definitely was not switched off camera. This was the scene from every 80s and 90s action film where we get a chance to see how evil the bad guy is. Like, when there's no hero around, it's like one scene that really hype up the badness. Like, you've seen The Untouchables with De Niro.
Yes.
He has that one scene where it's got all these people at work for him, and he's just like, yeah, was it you, master? Yeah, it was me. Ah, it's okay. And he just beats him to death with a baseball bat. This was this. But it was so funny to see Triple H doing it like...
Yeah, it just... it's so weird. The second time in the history of the WWF where the death of a snake has been used to further a storyline.
Oh, they should have cut away to...
So with any luck, Triple H will be out next week with a big stack of snake burgers for everybody to eat.
Because, you know, they cut away from that in the broadcast on Prime Time. So they cut to Sean Mooney, remember his name.
Yeah,
so
that's
they cut away from there. Like, ooh.
Can somebody do like a real hard cut?
Oh, who do we know?
John! John! Can you do...
His full name, please.
John Eiley. Photoshop John Eiley.
Yeah, Photoshop
John Eiley. John, can you take this clip of Triple H about, and he's about to hammer the snake, just cut to Sean Mooney in the WWF Control Center looking like petrified. That'd be great if you could. Thanks, mate. And if you get time, at John Eiley. Yeah. Sponsor him on Ko-fi. The thing where you buy somebody a drink if you do work for them or something like that. Sponsor him on there, at John Eiley.
I do that in real life. and then Triple H walks to the ringside area with like this bloody bag, and the company's like, "My God, that's horrible! That's so inhuman! He just beat a snake.
He just killed a snake.
He just killed a snake in a bag. That means he's definitely going to beat Austin the pay per view." And the crowd is just like, "Eh."
The crowd could not care less.
The amount of money he must have spent and having a blood like snake.
Snake charmers. That's how they get them in. It's like Pied Piper. He plays the flute to get them into the building. That arena in Long Island hires a professional snake charmer.
That's right. You heard it here first. And yeah, all that effort, all that money spent, distracting from the fact that Austin's not there, and they're like, "No, I don't care about snake. There's a snake in my bag."
I want to break. Let me break this down.
Break it down.
Okay, so. Triple H goes to the trouble. Now, I'm presuming he hasn't bought snakes. He's probably got them from a zoo, from the Long Island Zoo.
Wait, no, time out. These aren't Triple H's snakes. That's the poisonous snake room.
No. Okay, well, in that case, he owes the venue a lot of damages, right? Okay, if this is a venue that has a poisonous snake room, right? Number one, what the hell? And number two... Triple H owes you some money, right? If Triple H went to the trouble of renting / buying snakes to put in a room to pick one at random to kill, my basic question, why buy loads? Just buy one. If you're going to kill just one, just instead of renting a room full of them, just buy one and say, "That's my pet snake." Go to a pet shop, buy a pet snake, and then it's yours to, if you want to massacre it, then that's on you. You're an arse, but that's on you.
It should have just had, like, this old man just... Has anyone seen my snake? Hello? there was a snake here in this... that's right. In the poisonous snake room, there was a snake in the snake... I know that's where they go, right? I mean, for a bath, you go to the bathroom.
What if...
Has anyone seen it? There's this bag with lots of blood coming out of it. Is that somebody's?
The alternative is, what if this was the venue where Savage and Liz held their wedding reception? Oh. And these are just wedding gifts left over.
There's one hungry snake.
They open at least one snake.
He's like, after 10,000 years, I'm free.
Rita Repulsa.
I will grant you 3 wishes for letting me... Hey, what are you doing? Bang, bang, bang.
Could have got Harry Potter to talk to him.
Yeah. Buy the pay-per-view, please, please. We're sorry about Unforgiven.
Nigiri, make sure you buy the pay-per-view for Harry Potter. I'm going to pop this wand up his bum.
I preferred the audiobook version because my parents used to listen to them all every time we go for a drive, where he lets a snake out in the
trousers.
Oh, Christ. Snake out in the
zoo. In the zoo.
Yeah, he just lets it out. And like in the film, it's all like, he's all like, the snake's all like sinister and like, thanks. But in the audiobook, he was like, thanks, Harry. Like, I'm off to Mexico. Arriba.
quite a jolly snake.
Yeah, it's like, cheers.
I am the jolly snake.
Albuquerque, here I come. Puts on his hat and his little snake bag. Anyway, Valvinus, now let's get serious now. Valvinus with a serious promo, and he knows about snakes. He tries being serious. He sounds more like an 80s serious, like a Ken Patera type.
Yeah.
Tonight, in this very ring, I am the... Whatever. But then, it doesn't matter, because Mankind attacks him. and then Bulldog attacks Mick Foley, meaning Bulldog and Mankind have been brawling all this time. Mankind saw Venus out the corner of his eye and was like, distracted Bulldog by like, hey, look, a bin! And just went and hit Venus, and then Bulldog stopped being distracted and went and tagged him anyway.
This is a weird trope that Mankind has. On a few occasions in his career, he's had fights that have gone on for ages.
Oh, yeah.
Like, there was one in 96, and it was the opening of In Your House, Cold Day in Hell. It might be 97, can't remember. But Triple H versus Mankind was the opening match, and they went to a DQ, and they ended up brawling out of
That's
the ring.
Right.
And they just kept coming back throughout the night to the brawl that continues to go on. This is the same thing.
That's right. And then there's a break. We come back. Mankind is being attended to by some medics and Sergeant Slaughter. Yeah, he'll help. Rock walks past. And then Mankind goes, Rock, this one time, win one for the Micker. And Rock goes, who the hell is the Micker?
Who the hell is the Micker?
Classic reference there to not Rockney, All American, which is Ronald Reagan giving that line. And he basically won the presidency with that line. Win one for the Gipper.
Oh. And then he died.
And then he died.
Wah, 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 wah.
We're one for the game. So Venus maybe should have changed his theme around this time, because he comes out and it's like his serious foul Venus. He steals Rock socks and puts them in cocks. He's going to be wrestling Mankind on pay-per-view. Hello.
What would you have changed it to? Because he did change it. He changed it in 2000, didn't he? To that dance
it was that, yeah, it had the sax at the start. And it is a great sax theme, but it's like, you can't go, all right, he's a serious porn guy.
Yeah.
I mean, he's not coming out with the towel and everything else like that, but it's such an abrupt change. Maybe just like, hello, ladies, and WWF title.
And my title shot.
My title shot. But hang on, it is autumn. This is when WWF does their clock watching time. To push any random dude, because it doesn't matter, because by the time Rumble comes along, it's all changed anyway. Yeah. So yeah, hey, Val Venus, you're a serious threat now. Don't worry, it's not going to last. And here we are, his SmackDown main event with The Rock. And The Rock is mad. He's going to win one for the Micker, so it's no DQ, because Mankind versus Bulldog.
Are they just randomly no DQ matches? It's just because of reasons.
Bulldog forgot the rules. Stephanie McMahon threw a bin at him and now he's got amnesia. Venus gets whipped over the guardrail and we do the crowd brawl thing we literally saw just 10 minutes ago. But it is a Rock main event match, so he's got to do that crowd brawl. Swinging net breaker from The Rock that I think he stopped doing after a while because it was always stunningly loose.
Mm-hmm.
And Venus is a great athlete. If you don't believe me, ask the women he used to work with. Thanks, Lawler.
Hey!
Rock main event special of banging the opponent off the stage. Going all the way here. And Venus is getting nothing here. Rock even puts Venus in a chin lock when usually matches would have, you know, the bad guy doing that to get the crowd supporting him. Venus gets clotheslined on the outside. Rock takes nothing, dumps him in the ring steps, goes on commentary, goes, how about Venus meets Mr. Tableau? Slams him. You son of a bitch. He puts Venus on commentary, but he's too beat up to say anything, so he just slaps him. Nothing here. Venus has given less than what Rock gave Bulldog on the mic. Eventually, Venus gets a spinebuster to the ring and actually sells that for a bit. Lawler says, we'll have to call Venus the most erectifying man in sports entertainment.
That's
if he
a
wins.
Good line. That's a good line.
Eventually, crowd gets behind him. Rock gives Val Venus's finishing move, the fisherman suplex.
That was cute.
Well, as he called it, the seaman suplex, but he's serious now.
Did he really call it that?
Yeah.
I never knew that.
It's a good wordplay.
It makes sense, and it's absolutely true.
For the period, it's practically, you know.
Seaman suplex isn't good for the period.
Seaman suplex. And you always call it fisherman suplex, right? Because he uses the hook. See,
I
never
thought...
Someone tweeted that and said, I've only just realised that. And I went, oh, I never thought about that before. And everyone was like going, you're an idiot. I'm like, That could be one for your wrestling curiosities. Because I assumed an Irishman invented the Irish whip.
He did. Dano Armani.
Exactly. So where's fisherman Lutez? Whatever.
Where did the Okay, all right. So someone called you an idiot for not knowing that's why it's called a fisherman suplex.
Well, I guess people. I've never really thought about it before. Someone said like,
if
oh,
you,
it's just
if you did
hook.
That, if you're the person who did that, all right, dickhead. Tell me where the Northern Lights suplex came from. Crack on with that.
Yeah.
Good luck.
Where did it come from?
I don't know.
But... I was like, on the next episode of Wrestling Mysteries. Anyway, goes look. Vavis goes to the chair, but here's Mick. Mick accidentally hits The Rock.
Da da da! Dissension! Smellness.
And he just watches rather than stop the pin, but Rock kicks out because obviously he's going to pin the Rock and SmackDown. Jesus Christ. Then Mankind gives Venus the sock. The Venus kicks in the dick, and when Mankind turns around, The Rock gives Mick the rock bottom.
Yeah, drops him.
And then just finishes Val Venus as an afterthought. 1, 2, 3. And Mankind and The Rock nearly come to blows as the show goes off the air.
I like how Mankind recovers from the rock bottom almost as quickly as the way Tyson Fury recovered from the running power slam at Crown Jewel. Like, almost, he's immediately, like, the show ends with them two gesticulating wildly at one another. Like, Mick Foley got a rock bottom, like, a minute ago, and he's fine. That annoyed me a touch.
Yep.
Like, I get annoyed when finishers don't get the credence they deserve.
Yeah, but I guess it was like, okay, you need to get up, you need to get up, you need to get up. Why? So, Mortal Kombat Conquest is on after this. And that was the show.
Yeah, there we go. That was quite an interesting episode. I think we are very much on the way to No Mercy now. There's some unusual build for stuff and some exciting build for other things. Like the whole tag team ladder match that we are leading up to, where the focus is very much, hey, there's a lovely woman. Here's four guys who are going to change the industry.
Yep.
Lovely woman. What a time. What a time. What did you remember from this particular episode of SmackDown?
Where's my title shot? I'm trying to think of something else, but come on.
Where's my title shot? I think,
Is that the most memorable thing? Bulldog? Oh, God, no.
No.
There is something else coming up soon, isn't there?
Bulldog. Oh, yeah. Bulldog. We're not done with Bulldog yet. For me...
I just remembered what it was, because you were talking about it earlier. I'm like, what's he talking about? That match. That match is coming up.
I genuinely remember enjoying the tag team tornado match and going, these guys are really good. I remember watching it and thinking, actually, they're really good.
See, I was going to do that as a thing I forgot. Like, They were having these matches on the build-up to it. I thought, I knew about the tit, but I only knew the No Mercy match.
Yeah.
I thought the tit was a tournament. It's not, actually. It's a best of series.
It's a best of five, but they can't call it that. Otherwise, you've got a... If it's a Terry Invitational best of five, it's called the tear-off.
Right. And they didn't want the tip.
Just the tip.
Doesn't work. It only works if Terry's involved. That's the thing. People can remember this match. Yeah, so... I just thought that they beat up the Hollies or Viscera and Midian, whatever, and then they had this match. Blah, blah, blah. That makes sense, having Edge and Christian versus the Hardys in a ladder match. But it's like, oh, they're building up to this by wrestling each other. And that actually makes sense because, the crowds aren't getting it because they're so unfamiliar with this style, which is funny to think of. Like, this is literally the evolution. It's, what's the word of the podcast?
Embryotic.
Thank you, Tom. And where can people send emails?
Embryotic at cultaholic.com. Don't send it there. That's a dead link. What did you forget?
The thing I just said.
The tag title match.
Yeah. What did you forget?
The tit. What did I forget from this? I forgot the mud wrestling thing. I forgot that happened. And wow, it's just one of those things that really doesn't age well. Because that's your women's championship match on the night. And there's plenty more of this to come. And you feel...
Not for much longer.
You genuinely feel, and I'll probably be accused of being a bit of a cuck when I say stuff like this, but genuinely you feel... It makes you feel a little bit grim because you think of all these incredible performers who are trailblazing now. Like, you know, Becky Lynch, Ronda Rousey, Charlotte Flair, first women's main event of WrestleMania ever, and it was great. And it's like we, as wrestling fans, as guys, we were lucky to have so many... wrestlers that we could connect with and we could relate to. You know, if you couldn't relate to the physique of someone like a Rock, you could have, you know, the doughy Mankind sort of goofiness of that. You know, we had so many. And
the sexual addiction of Mark Henry,
which I think we're all related to. But then, like, if you were a female fan and you couldn't, in terms of other females on TV, there wasn't much to resonate with because it was all just tits. Tits. Way close off. And that sucks. That really sucks that we were there. And again, I'll get accused of being a cuck for thinking like that, but I don't really care.
That term's lost all meaning anyway, so you're allowed to say that. Because, you're right, people change. Attitude change. But with this, there was one target demographic they were going after.
Yeah, and they went after
it. Was young males.
It.
And so that makes sense to have this. Wrestling has changed.
Yeah.
Some cynically have said, well, they changed it immediately after that whole Benoit sports pharmacy thing that really did the number on them in 07 to kids who probably can't read newspapers or websites, whatever works.
Because bra and panties matches really fell off a cliff after the Chris Benoit thing.
Yeah, that's it. It was a slow thing. Yeah. But anyway, but yeah, you're right. For women, good for them to have, you know, role models and go.
Good for you, women. Good for you, you lovely little ladies.
But I realise you are very eloquent the way you speak. I will sound like a cook. I will continue talking so you sound even more eloquent. Women are good, yay. Yeah. Some of them, look, they can't wrestle, but you should see them box. Whey! Lads.
Yeah, so it's a different time now. And it's
dynamic. That's why we're watching it with hindsight and going, oh, that's interesting.
Yeah.
Like I said, the focus is on this woman offering her services.
Yeah.
Winkity wink. And also, yeah, ladder match. So, yeah, things have changed. Mm. I still think Jeff Jarrett could be this character. Maybe not Jeff Jarrett, but someone who's like, he gets amnesia, maybe from a bin shot, maybe from some other means, or we get amnesia on TV nowadays, and come back as like 99.
Just suddenly criminally insane. Like, yeah, I mean, there is some perverse comedy value in somebody having amnesia.
The best type of comedy
going
value.
Back to 1999, going up to someone like Shayna Baszler and saying, hey, let's see the puppies.
Yeah.
Just to have Baszler absolutely deck them. snap their face off.
What's that? I was going to say it. Jamie Dundee line. He goes, I'm from the South where men are men. And women are trained, you know. If that other guy come back and do that nowadays, that'd be fantastic.
Oh, they just get
if as long as they know they're doing it. No, because you know what would happen if you did that? You get cheered.
Oh Christ! We're a weird bunch, aren't we, wrestling fans?
We are, weird bunch. Especially the people listening to this fantastic podcast, which is coming to its beautiful end.
Thank you very much for doing so. He is at Matthew Gregg on Twitter. I am at Tom Campbell on Twitter. Together, we are at Cultaholic. Don't forget to join us next week. I love you, bye.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
For all the wrestling headlines in just 10 minutes, search Cultaholic Wrestling News on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts from.